1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. It is Feltus and Kale. Good morning to you wherever you are. It is a delight to have you along with us. And Dan Feltus, we want to welcome our new presenting sponsor to the program today. And we're talking about Granite State Dairy Promotions. And they're proudly presenting Feltus and Kale. Between Granite State Dairy Promotions and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and we're so delighted to have them on board.
That's great. And, you know, our local dairy farmers, dairy producers, they're vital to our local economy and to the supply of dairy throughout the state. It's great to have them on board.
It really is, and we'll be talking with Amy Hall, the executive director of the Granite State Dairy Promotion, talk about New Hampshire dairy. She'll be on with us on our Thursday Feltus and Kale program. But we have a very special guest for this edition of Feltus and Kale, a gentleman that has served us very, very well over the years, Dan Feltus. And we're talking about Dan Weed of Weed Family Automotive. And we'll be chatting with Dan right after these important messages. Feltus and Kale continues on 1039 1450 WKXL and NHTalkRadio.com. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feltus and Kale proudly brought to you by Granite State Dairy Promotions and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And we welcome to our program today, as we mentioned, a guy that has served us very well over the years, and that is Dan Weed from Weed Family Automotive. Dan, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thank you very much.
You're sounding great, and of course, Dan and I have shared the microphone many times over the years at another radio station down the dial, but glad to have him on the show today. And I know, Dan, that you have taken your car to Weed Family Automotive as well.
We take both our cars.
Both
our cars.
There you go.
You know, Weed Family Automotive, downtown Concord. Look them up. Tremendous service. Great people. I can't say enough about the service that we've had for our vehicles, and really appreciate it. And appreciate all you do, Dan.
Well, thank you very much. And same to you. I have a deep appreciation for what you folks have gone through in our state government and all the challenges that it brings, as I've done work with several state agencies. And I sometimes wonder how you guys manage to get as much done as you do.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, when I served in the state Senate, certainly we got a lot done. And, you know, and there's so many people sacrificing out there. And working hard on the front lines, frontline workers. And Dan, you and your staff have been on the front lines, you know, working. Have you had to change protocols and how you provide service to folks when they bring their cars in?
Yeah, we did early on. We had a no-contact customer service protocol in place for a number of months, really, till we could open the doors during the summertime. And it was a little inconvenient, but we were able to push through it and work on it. And at this point, it's just the safety protocols in place for us as far as, you know, cleaning, cleanliness, whatnot, and all just really the use of masks as people come in and out, and particularly with some of our vendors as they're in and out so many times a day. But all in all, it's worked out well for us. Everybody has adjusted, and we really haven't had any problems at all. So we've been truly fortunate through most of this.
And you have one of the, you know, true, you know, family small business auto shops, in not just in Concord, but in the state. Talk to us about what that's like to have that kind of operation as opposed to some of these, you know, bigger multi-state corporation operations.
Sure. So, I mean, really the day-to-day operations is where myself and my wife, Jody, who does all my financial part of the business for me, and we sort of do that together. But it's really us responsible for the well-being of our staff and whatnot. And so we're now responsible for, you know, really six other people and their well-being, and our customers as well, too. So it's really very fortunate to have the customer base that we've done. This year marks, last year was our 25th year in business, how time flies. So we're working on number 26 this year. So again, we've been very fortunate to make it through. We were able to take advantage of some of the federal programs that were offered last year, and that certainly helped out through some of the lean times. And we're here to say that we made it through, and everything's well, and we're actually in the process of adding one more member to our staff who should start next week, actually, coming to us from a great variety of experience. So
that's great.
We're adding to what we have now to be able to keep up with demand, and very happy to be able to do that.
Dan Weed with us from Weed Family Automotive, located at 124 Store Street in Concord. And and Dan, the pandemic now is a year old. It's been with us for now a little over a year, as a matter of fact. But, it doesn't seem that you guys really missed a beat at all. I mean, did you never closed, did you?
No, we never closed. We never had any staff members up until recently that had been exposed to it. And as much as I hate to say it, I was a staff member that came down with it. But I had it over a weekend, so none of my staff was exposed to it. So yeah, we were able to keep moving on and work through it. And even last year when we were in the thick of things, I think one of the things that we did to sort of change and we took on some bigger projects that we wouldn't typically have done, some restoration work, some engine overhauls and things like that. And so some of those big projects that came to fruition that really helped carry us through. And of course, our regular customer base as well, most of our customers were still working, still having to go to work and take care of their cars at the same time. And, there was no reprieve on inspections or registrations, so those still had to be done even through the course of the pandemic and whatnot.
No, absolutely, and you were there every step of the way. Every step of the way. I know you helped me out from time to time over the course of the pandemic, and I hope we'll continue to do so over the months and years to come. So, will there be any? After some of the protocols that have had to take place over the past year and in your business and the automotive business, is anything going to change forever as a result of this pandemic?
Well, I think not so much in the repair industry. I think we're going to see the same safety precautions in place for a while yet. I think some of the changes that you're truly going to see in the industry itself comes on not only the manufacturing side, but also on the dealership and sales side of it as well, because a lot of the dealerships had gone to, much like we did, a no-contact policy, and some of that transcended through their sales as well. So a lot of the dealerships have adapted really well. You can virtually buy a car over the phone or online with never setting foot in the dealership, which had sort of been in place before. However, it wasn't used on a regular basis, and now we're starting to see more and more of that, particularly with some of, the younger generation. I still like to go sit and meet my salesmen and have that one-on-one interaction. But for a lot of people, that's a highly intimidating process to be able to do it online or without having to ever set foot into the facility. That is an attractive option for a lot of people.
Well, you know me, Dan, and I really am not, I don't know that much about cars, really, except, how nice a car feels to drive sometimes and that sort of thing. But I'm really not a technical guy when it comes to vehicles. But I can't imagine buying a vehicle without at least test driving it once. I can't. I really cannot.
Yeah, and that is to me as well. It's a foreign concept to even dream of that. But if you know exactly what you want and your options and whatnot, and for a lot of people, it is just for lack of a better term, a tool to get from home to work to the grocery store and back, and a lot of people don't care what they drive. And then you have just the opposite on the other end of the spectrum, that people get highly attached to their cars. They name their cars as part of the family, and when it's time to let that car go, it's a very emotional thing. So there's quite a variety of interests there.
Dan, you talked a little bit about how things are shifting and have shifted in your industry with respect to the pandemic. What about just generally in terms of technological advances, either diagnostic or, you know, repair, whatever? What are some of the trends in the auto repair industry?
So one of our biggest challenges is keeping up with some of the technology. A lot of our expenses in training and keeping up with the stuff that changes on a, you know, I dare to say not even yearly basis, but, you know, monthly basis, you know, things change and the technology is ever evolving. And some of it comes down to computer diagnostics. And one of the things that we often don't even give a thought to is all the technology in the car. It is not unusual these days to have 20 or more computers or modules in a car for different functions and functionality with what you have. And all of those require software updates. And your car truly has a working computer network in it, because all these computers talk to each other and garner different information for different functions in the car. So that is becoming more and more prevalent, more and more challenging to keep up with the technology and particularly some of the software. The manufacturers don't make it easy, per se, to do some of these software updates. You know, I've seen some of the particularly European vehicles where a software update is a 6 to 8 hour process.
Wow. Yeah, and I bet, I mean, if you have, as you mentioned, 20 computer systems and some of them talking to each other and trying to figure out what is not working along the way, I guess that's pretty challenging, and certainly that the technology to do the diagnostics on that has to be pretty pricey, right?
It is. So in our shop, I have up to 6 different diagnostic pieces, and the investment in those alone are probably close to $40,000.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, it has changed, I think, since you, well, 25 years of Weed Family Automotive, and I'm sure that things have changed dramatically in terms of car repair over those 25 years.
It has, and even in my career, you know, when I first started into this, we were still adjusting carburetors and chokes on the carburetors. We were doing tune-ups every, say, 12,000 miles or so, and now we're doing routine maintenance services, you know, tune-ups and whatnot, more closer to 100,000 miles.
Wow.
On average. And certainly, you know, when we were doing spark plug changes on some of these cars early on at 12,000 miles, and then all of a sudden they said, oh, great, you can wait and do these now at 30,000 miles, we were rather skeptical. And when then they changed it from 30,000 miles to 100,000 miles, again, we kind of shook our head like, well, is this really going to work? But over the years, it has. But on the flip side of that is, you know, your spark plugs used to cost anywhere from $2 to $5, and now your spark plugs are sometimes upwards of $20 or $30 a piece.
Wow. And speaking of tune-ups and that sort of thing, oil changes, what's the basic, for listeners who out there, what is the basic timeline in terms of oil change, tune-ups, that kind of thing? I know it might vary by car, but what is the general recommendation that you would provide to listeners?
So our base oil change mileage for your regular oil change, we're still using 3,000 miles as that interval.
Okay.
On a base oil change. Now, most of the cars these days are gone to a full synthetic requirement for their engine oils, and typically we like to see those anywhere from 6,000 to 7,000 miles on a full synthetic oil change. And, you know, again, that's one of the things that has evolved over the years, is that we had one or two oil viscosities or thicknesses that would cover almost every car that came in through the door. Now we're on the other end of it where we're having to keep five or six different oils in stock to make sure we have the coverage for all the cars we need. And the oils, you know, in the old days, we used to talk about the 1030s and the 1040 oil mm-hmm. changes or oil viscosities. Now we're talking, the latest one that's just come out is a 08 viscosity, where we've got 016, 020, then we get into the 520, 530, and whatnot, and on it goes. And it seems like every year they're coming out with a new oil viscosity rating to meet primarily emissions purposes.
Yeah, yeah. And in addition to those oil changes, what in terms of like tire rotation and basic carb maintenance, some of the other things that people should be doing on a regular basis, what do you recommend people do on a regular basis, and how regular does it need to be?
Sure. And a lot of it comes down to a mileage-based service. But so, you know, your basic oil change is going to be around 3,000. Your synthetic oil change is 6,000 to 7,000. And when you do that 6,000 to 7,000-mile oil change, you want to rotate the tires at the same time, every time. So you do that tire rotation every 6,000 to 7,000 miles. Some of your regular maintenances that you see are, you know, transmission fluid service, differential, transfer case. And those are manufacturer-driven, but typically the standard has been 30,000, 60,000, 90,000 for a lot of those. And again, it varies by manufacturer, but those are your, right. your three major service intervals. And then you get into, at 90, then you get into the 110, 120,000 mile services. And those are the most common frequencies for your major services. And again, we go back to the spark plugs. Spark plugs is one of those things that, again, we went from that 30,000 mile interval to 100,000 mile, but we're starting to see some of the manufacturers go back to a 60,000 mile interval on spark plugs, depending on the type of spark plugs that they use from the manufacturer. So really the golden rule comes out of the manufacturer, and
right.
in most cars, you do have a maintenance manual that comes with the owner's manual that you can look it up. And if you don't have that, we have the ability to look it up here at the shop to know what comes up at that 30 or 60 or 90,000 mile interval that's required. And then one of the things that we see often overlooked is what we call a cabin air filter. So this is part of your heating and air conditioning system in the car. It's a filter for it, much like you'd have on your home furnace. Other than the fact that this is a you know, rolling piece of machinery, your car is, and then it's exposed to some pretty, you know, pretty severe extremes, as well as one of our favorite things that we see when we check these cabin air filters, is that the critters love it in there. It's a nice, warm, dry place, and some of the houses that we found built into the cabin air filter area and the blower motor has been rather intriguing.
Yeah, some of your pictures of those critters are legendary, Dan, you know?
Yeah.
they really are. But getting back to tire rotation, if you do it with you know, every, you know, oil change of your synthetic oil, 6,000 to 7,000 miles, if you rotate your tires on a regular basis, as you suggest, how many miles should you get out of, I mean, a good tire? If you buy a good quality tire, how many miles should you expect to get out of it?
Well, and I think that's the key to it, Ken, is buying a good quality tire. So, if you know, I would expect a higher mileage out of a Michelin than you would out of some of the other tires. But on average, I like to see at least 40 to, say, 60,000 miles out of a good set of tires. Now, there's some caveats to that, as you would well expect. You know, the quality of the tire comes into play. And there are so many choices on tires now, as far as tread wear rating, load range, and whatnot. That comes into play. And then, of course, with the all-wheel drive cars or four-wheel drive cars, it depends on how much you use that as well. So we expect to see lesser mileage on an all-wheel drive car out of a set of tires than we would, say, a front-wheel drive or what I call a selectable four-wheel drive. So if you've got an all-wheel drive car, I would say somewhere in the 30 to 40,000 mile range, depending on the tire that you put on.
Dan Weed is with us from Weed Family Automotive. They've been located at 124 Store Street now for over a quarter of a century. And it's hard to believe since, you know, Dan is only in his mid-30s. So it is hard to believe. But
very entrepreneurial in kindergarten.
Yeah, right, exactly. But we're talking about maintenance of your vehicle. And I would imagine the longevity of a tire, does it have to do does a tire last longer, let's say, in Florida than it would in New Hampshire?
Well, I think that also comes into play, road conditions. And it's a good discussion this time of year as we come into our frost heave and pothole season. We've already seen a couple of cars that didn't make it happily through the potholes. And, it tears up the tire pretty good, if not destroys it. So obviously when you don't have those road conditions in different parts of the country, then it definitely affects the life of the tire. So one of the other considerations, though, in some place like Florida or Arizona is what we see as or describe as a dry rot in the tire. Mm. As the rubber starts to deteriorate over age, we'll start to see that tire start to crack and split and come apart. So in other parts of the country, they might discard a tire not so much because of tread wear, but because of the age of the tire and the fact that it's starting to decompose or come apart.
Yep. Speaking of just mileage generally, Dan, what is, just out of curiosity, what is the highest mileage vehicle that ever came into the shop? What was the number of miles, if you remember?
Oh, we've seen cars with around 400,000 miles on them.
Wow.
Wow, that's crazy! What kind of cars were those?
One of them was a Toyota Tundra pickup truck.
Oh, wow.
That the gentleman used for business, and he would keep it on the road, as long as he possibly could. And most everything was, engine was original in it, and whatnot. So, but he was very religious about taking care of that. Oil changes were to a T on the spot. Everything was done. So if something was recommended for mileage or services, it was taken care of right there. And that comes into play an awful lot. And that car never stopped. I mean, it was on the road all the time. But it is nothing for us to see a car with, 200,000 miles these days. And, again, starting to date myself, they used to trade cars in at 30, 40, 50,000 miles because they thought they were worn out. And now to see cars at 100,000 miles on any given day is nothing. And 200,000 miles is becoming more and more commonplace.
Wow. Well, sort of the, obviously to get to that level, as you mentioned, Dan, you got to take care of it, take care of the vehicle. What kind of the inverse of that question then is, what is the worst conditioned vehicle that you've ever seen pull into the shop? And can you describe it without naming names, of course?
Yeah. Probably some of the worst ones we've seen come down to two different things, is mechanical issues and rust. So we've had a couple of cars come in that we would go to put it up on the lift, and we stop because the frame is literally ready to split in half.
Oh, boy.
and so, again, that's not something that you see in all parts of the country. But one of the things up here in the New England, or as described in the automotive industry, is the rust belt or salt belt, where they use salt and other chemicals to treat the roads. Rust around here is highly prevalent and really affects the longevity or life of a car. So, one of the things that you can do to help mitigate the salt issue is obviously cleaning the car on a regular basis, and particularly the undercarriage. It makes a big difference in the life of the vehicle. And just, run it through the car wash, whatever it happens to be, and get that salt off there at least a few times during the winter to help. But, yeah, and we have seen some vehicles that came into the shop that were just, you have to shake your head and wonder, how did it make it as long as it actually did? And, I'm sorry, but you can't drive this car home.
Dan Weed is with us from Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. We'll take a quick break. It's Feldis and Kale 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Welcome back. It's Feldis and Kale, proudly brought to you by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers on 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Our guest is Dan Weed from Weed Family Automotive in Concord at 124 Store Street, in business now for over 25 years. And when you started the business over 25 years ago, there weren't hybrid vehicles, there weren't electric cars. So that aspect of the industry has changed a little bit.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the neat things that we get to see as far as technology. We can see the progression of the automobile itself, and certainly the hybrids. You know, the, believe it or not, the Prius has been around this year for, I believe it's 20 years at this point.
Wow.
The first one came out in 2000 or 2001. So, yeah, the Prius has been out for almost 20 years now that we've had hybrid vehicles. And you know, that was, at the time, groundbreaking technology for it. But the technology in of itself has been around for many, many years in different applications. But to put it into a car was whole, you know, completely, again, at that point, groundbreaking technology in the automotive industry. But now, you know, going to fully electric cars, and we recently have had two or three Teslas in just for, you know, the inspections and whatnot. But looking at the Teslas, checking out the technology in it, and it's pretty amazing what they've done to, just change the entire powertrain system within the car. I mean, we still have tires, brakes, steering, suspension to deal with, you know, in whether it's a hybrid or an electric car. So that part of it really hasn't changed a lot. But when it comes to the electronic systems, the entertainment, the radio, the control, and particularly the control panel, it's, you know, just crazy what they've done with it to make this work all together.
And people talk, Dan, about the possibility, it comes up every now and then, about the technology and self-driving cars. Is that, where is that at? And is that really an imminent possibility, as some people suggest? And how, in your practice and in your business, going to adjust to that development?
So that technology is out there right now as we speak. It's being tested on a number of different platforms. It is out there on a regular basis right now in the trucking industry. There is such a driver shortage out there right now in the trucking industry that they've really made a big push for some of these self-driving vehicles or autonomous vehicles. What it's going to do for us, it's going to bring in another leap in technology, another learning curve, because what these systems rely on is cameras, on digital imaging, on all sorts of sensors to be able to make it work properly. And we're already seeing it in our everyday life in what they call accident detection and avoidance systems,
yep,
otherwise known as, they call it ADAS. And so something as simple as replacing a windshield or a outside rear view mirror, you now have to recalibrate that collision avoidance system. Otherwise, it will not function properly. So something as simple as that now triggers a whole different set of technology that has to be learned and incorporated into the car. So the self-driving vehicles are going to rely greatly on that. But it still is going to require somebody in that vehicle for oversight in case some malfunction happens or whatever. You still have to be in control of the vehicle. And that's, I think, going to be one of the key things. You know, you obviously have heard news reports of people driving down the road and their self-driving cars, reading a book, watching a movie or whatnot.
Eating cereal.
We're putting the makeup on, whatever it happens to be. The reality is you still have to be attentive to what's going on around you because, you know, that car is only as good as the sensors or the programming or software behind it. And nothing is 100% perfect, nor are we as drivers. But, you know, my biggest fear is that we're taking the ability of the the driver out of it by replacing it with some of these technologies. You know, I love a rear view camera system, but you still need to know how to back up using your mirrors out on the car. You still need to take a walk around the car to make sure there's
right.
nothing around it. You know, the kid's bicycle isn't stuffed under the car or something like that somewhere, or even worse. We look at, we joke about this every winter, but people have to learn how to drive all over again every winter. But they're so reliant on the all-wheel drive or anti-lock brake technology or, oh, if I get in an accident, the airbag will go off and save me. It still comes back to driving and driving skills. And I still think that the driver is first in line and fully responsible and need to be able to be aware of everything going on around you. And some of this technology can be horribly distracting.
Getting back to the electric car for a minute, Dan, what do we know what percentage of people drive electric cars these days? I know it's not very high. It's probably, what, maybe 1%, 2%? Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah, I still think you're under 10% of the electric vehicle, you know, in the entire automotive fleet. But that number is changing on a daily basis. You know, there are so many more manufacturers introducing electric vehicles. The last few nights, Audi is pushing real hard with their e-tron car. I think part of the aura of the electric vehicle is, you know, you kind of equate it to your initial impression is a golf cart. You know, it just kind of putts along and whatever. I think Tesla has done a marvelous job with their car line, and the performance of these vehicles is astounding. I mean, some of the Teslas have a 0 to 60 time that's under 4 seconds.
Wow.
Which is, you know, that ranks right up there with, you know, some of your Corvettes, your Camaros, your Mustangs, and stuff like that. So that aura of the electric vehicle being a putt-putt car or whatnot is going away. And a lot of the manufacturers are truly sort of getting away from that, but, you know, incorporating a lot of performance into their electric cars. I think with the electric pickup that Tesla's coming out with and the electric Ford pickup and GM, you know, you're into that four-wheel drive market, and it brings into a whole different segment of an electric vehicle market that you wouldn't have had with your everyday car, so, you know, say a Tesla or a Chevy Volt or whatever it happens to be. So they're starting to go after different segments of the car and truck market with the electric vehicles. But, you know, again, one of the things that we have to remember is the performance of these cars, depending on how they're set up, is truly amazing and something that you wouldn't have considered typically in buying an electric car.
So you've driven an electric car, Dan, correct?
Yes, I've driven 2 or 3 different models, yes.
Yeah. So what about when you come to a stoplight? What happens at that point? And how do you how's the acceleration after the light turns green?
Sure. I mean, so there's no engine to shut off. So the motor just slowly decelerates as you come to a stop. And when you're ready to take off again, it's really not a lot different than any other car. Matter of fact, it's probably a lot better because with an electric motor and the control system in it, you have instant torque. Well, with a gas or diesel engine, you have to wait for that engine to get to a certain RPM where you really pick up the power band or the torque range in it. So with an electric vehicle, there's no torque range or horsepower range. It's instant and it's right there immediately. So as soon as you push down on that pedal, it's ready to go and you're at full horsepower, full torque right from the get-go.
Well, certainly the technology sounds like it's changing pretty much every, you said monthly, it seems like daily, it's changing in your field, Dan. And one thing that hasn't changed over the years is obviously human interaction, human relations part of the business. And Weed Family Automotive is great in terms of repair. Also, Straight Shooters gives you reasonably priced and tells you what's going on. However, despite all of that, Dan, I'm sure that from time to time, a customer might get a little grumpy with, what has to be done in their car. And just out of curiosity, what kind of training and sort of de-escalation that might happen if that ever happens, where you say, all right, well, this is going to cost us some amount of money, and somebody's having a bad day and a little grumpy, and they, you know, fire off the handle a little bit. How do you deal with that, and how do you train your staff to deal with that?
Well, I think that is more of human nature more than anything.
Yeah,
everybody's different, and certainly we've had that happen before, where we've called up and talked to somebody, and all of a sudden, you know, and we don't know what's happened on their end,
right.
Either. You know, we're just calling up to let them know what we find, and yeah, it happens, and sometimes it's something that we may have presented or done wrong, or sometimes it's just other issues that are going on the customer's end that we're not aware of.
Right.
And we just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it comes down to being able to read people and understand people. And again, everybody's different. And there are people that would much rather deal with Bobby or Charlie. You know, one of them might, you know, acclimate more to Bobby, and some other people might like Charlie. And there's other people that just want to talk to me. And it's really about that relationship. And again, you know, there's people that I get along with really well that Charlie or Bobby might not get along with really well. And we kind of, you get to build those relationships and figure that out. And yeah, how do we, I don't know, de-escalate a situation like that? It really comes down to trying to be able to talk to the people, understand what's going on their end, as well as what we've presented to them. And then, you know, sometimes it's overwhelming. You know, you come in for a simple state inspection, and all of a sudden we've got to call you up and say, well, I'm sorry, Dan, it's going to be, it's going to be a couple $1,000s in repairs. And, you know, then we have to decide, all right, what do we have to do to be able to get the car through for, say, inspection? And what can we maybe wait a little bit on, whether it's a week or a month or something like that, and try and, you know, cater the needs of the car to the customer's budget and whatnot, and really talk through it and talk through the situation. And unfortunately, there's been times over the years, and I'm sure it happens everywhere, where it just wasn't a good match right from the get-go, and you end up with, unfortunately, a customer relationship that has to end. And you know, it's not always easy. And certainly in this day and age, a lot of people like to get online and post reviews and this and that. And there's always two sides to the story versus what you see online. And one of the things that you obviously don't want to get into, particularly online, is a back and forth match, so to speak. You know, so we try and, you know, if something like that happens, we try and call and talk to the customer, work through it and figure it out, you know, and try and come up with a good resolution for everybody. But it really comes down to, you know, years of experience, being able to understand people, understand their needs. And again, you know, you never know what's happening on their end.
Right.
And it might just, again, be wrong place, wrong time.
And it's your 26th anniversary coming up to this weekend. Is that what you said, Dan?
This year. So,
this year, okay.
We started our business in 1995 in early July.
Right.
So coming up in July will be our 26th anniversary.
Weed Family Automotive, great, great family-owned business, downtown Concord, 124 Store Street. And whether you're dealing with Dan, Bobby, or Charlie, they're all great.
They are. They truly are. We can speak, Dan Feltus, from personal experience.
We can.
With Dan and Bobby and Charlie. A great crew at Weed Family Automotive. And how is any improvements to the infrastructure as far as electric cars are concerned? I mean, and as far as, you know, charging stations, charging areas are concerned, is that improving, Dan?
It is slowly improving, Ken. It's one of the...
I mean, before I buy my Tesla, I've got to know this, Dan.
I thought you already had two.
Right.
Well, plus the electric boat that he bought last year, too.
Right.
You know, I think, Ken, with any, as I'll describe, as any alternative fuel vehicle, the biggest challenge is the refueling, or in this case, the charging network. But it is ever expanding. I think probably, obviously, the most popular ones, or most prevalent ones, I should say, are the Tesla stations that you see, particularly at the rest areas in the state and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I think you'll start to see more and more stations, particularly here in the state of New Hampshire. I know that there was some settlement from the Volkswagen folks and that whole thing, that the state had gotten a big chunk of money. And a lot of that was going to be dedicated to some of the infrastructure and putting some more charging stations in different areas throughout the state. So I think that over the next few years, you'll start to see more and more charging stations in a variety of different places. I mean, typically you see them now at hotels, obviously at the dealerships, the rest areas. I think you'll start to see more and more of it in downtown areas, such as here in Concord, in different places. So that's going to be the next hurdle for the electric car industry, is coming up with that charging station infrastructure.
Well, that's a good thing to know. Good thing to know. And I will say that I think every casino I've been to in the last couple of years have charging stations. So if you're ever in doubt, you know, go to a parking lot at a casino and you should be okay. That's the best advice I could have for people.
But so is that to say that they're going to put casinos here in New Hampshire with charging stations?
No, that's not to say that. No, it's not to say that. No, I think that ship has sailed. I mean, Lou D'Alessandro has tried for many, many years, but I don't think it's going to succeed. But if you want to go a little bit south to the Encore, or maybe to the casinos in Connecticut or Springfield, Mass., you will find charging stations. I guarantee you. Guarantee you. Dan, listen, we really appreciate your time today here on Feltus and Kale, and I'm sure both of us will continue to be loyal customers at 124 Store Street. And you have a great crew there, Dan, a great family-owned business, and always have enjoyed, you know, taking our vehicles. You've kept mine in great shape. My goal is $300,000, and I'm more than halfway there. About 172,000.
Wow, that's great.
So I'm more than halfway there.
That's your old Tesla.
That's the old Tesla, right? I keep the other one in the garage pretty much, just for special occasions. Hey, thanks, Dan. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, Dan and Ken, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and have a great day. Thank you very much.
You as well, Dan. Thanks so much, Dan Weed. Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. It is Feltus and Kale, this rapidly moving show. Lots of great information from Dan Weed.
That's great.
We'll be back to wrap things up here on 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feltus and Kale proudly brought to you by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feltus and Kale, brought to you by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And, Dan, we have to celebrate a couple of champions.
You got it.
In Concord. First of all, on a Saturday night at the JFK Coliseum in Manchester, the Concord High Crimson Tide hockey team did it.
They did it. They did it. I wasn't able to watch it in real time, but it sounded like it was never in doubt, Ken.
You know, it really wasn't, to be honest. They scored early and often.
Yep.
You know, just like people used to vote in Chicago, early and often. and Concord beat Salem 7-0. Yeah. And Salem, a team that knocked off Bedford 2-1 in the semifinal round. And Concord came out, and they scored 2.5 minutes into the game and never looked back. They led it 4-0 after the first period, and it was just a tremendous performance all season long by Duncan Walsh's Concord High Crimson Tide team.
Well, congratulations to Coach Walsh and the student-athletes, and Concord Crimson Tide, congratulations to the entire community. Big, big championship, and it was really great to see.
And there was a little bit of a parade after that game in downtown Concord with the buses and the parents' cars and some police vehicles and
some
emergency
excitement.
Vehicles. Yeah, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then we want to congratulate the Bishop Brady girls.
Absolutely.
They won the Division II basketball title with a thrilling victory over Pelham Sunday afternoon in Bedford. And I'm happy to say, Dan, that both of those games that we talked about, the Concord High hockey victory and the Bishop Brady girls basketball championship victory, both games broadcast right here on WKXL.
Brought to you live by WKXL and Bishop Brady girls team, 52-50 win, stealing a shot at the end. It's thrilling. thrilling.
It was a thrilling victory, and Matt Corsetti and my good friend Bob Lippman had the call of that game. I was listening while I was out driving, and it was a very exciting game, very exciting call as well. So local radio is terrific, and that's what we're here to do.
Right here in WKXL. And, hey, we got March Madness, Ken. We got the brackets came out, and your UConn Huskies got a 7 seed. They play Maryland.
Yeah, and you got a 3, right?
Two seed.
The Iowa Hawkeyes.
Iowa Hawkeyes got a 2 seed playing Grand Canyon.
All right.
Which is located, presumably,
in the Grand Canyon? No. But Dan Feldes, we'll talk more college basketball. We have to wrap it up. Feldes and Kale for a Tuesday, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire Dairy Farmers.